Welcome to the Highlands College Podcast, where we try and find out about interesting things by talking to interesting people. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Highlands College Podcast. My name is Paul Spencer, and today I'm joined by Ben. And forgive me, Ben, I've known you about 12 years, but pronouncing your name, Pirzolo.
Pirzolo, there's so many ways you can say it, and all of them are right, to be honest.
And Ben is a training technician at the college, predominantly working with media, but also across IT and digital games, and basically is the person at Highlands College, if you have a technical issue that you might run to and hope for a creative solution.
Personal problems as well. You
know. and so what we're going to talk about with Ben today is part of the journey of your career, I guess, where we're looking. You've obviously been at Highlands for, I think,
a very long time,
like more than 10 years.
Yeah. I started, even though I've taken a year off here and there, I effectively started in 2003.
And you were a student at Highlands.
Yeah, actually did the IT course, the level 3 IT course. And then it was actually back then they did a thing where they employed a student for a year. Mm-hmm. It was paid, but it was kind of work experience. Yeah. But then I just didn't leave.
Brilliant. Okay, so very much part of the furniture here.
Yeah.
But you've also worked, whilst working at Highlands, you did some work for the BBC. What sort of work was that initially that you were doing for them?
It's because when I started here, I mean, I was initially started in the IT department, but they needed a technician in media who could use Macs, and Macs were relatively niche back then. Mm-hmm. And I'd been here about a year or two, and I started to feel a bit of a fraud because it felt odd, say, you know, telling students how to do things when I'd literally just come from college myself, had absolutely no experience, and so I felt I had to go out into the industry. Local BBC was an option, and I asked around a few people, but BBC was the place I ended up going to.
Right, okay. And what sort of stuff were you doing for them?
It started off, I took a showreel to them, and it just started off being filming and interviewing on the weekends because they only had full-time journalists in weekdays. But there was lots of weekend stuff, sports and that kind of thing. Yeah. So initially it was to just go out and interview people and make one-minute packages for the news on Monday. Okay. But then it ended up doing editing, making special programs for them, but also training their journalists in Final Cuts, video editing software, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, okay.
But also, again, because I happened to use Macs and they were a Mac shop, they all their servers and everything ran on Macs. So I ended up doing tech support for them as well because it was quite a rare skill to have, and so they grabbed hold of me, to be honest.
Right, okay, that's cool. So it started out kind of a CPD type thing with experience, and then something that grew into, you know, almost like a dual role while you were at the college. So you did that for, what, a few years?
To be honest, off and on, I was at the BBC for about 10 years.
Right, okay. And then... So you'd been at Highlands pretty much since you'd left college, and then you'd been working for the BBC for a long time as well, on kind of a part-time basis. And then you took a punt on actually venturing outside of the college. And so you was it 2 years?
You took
a career break for 2 years from the college as a training technician. And you went to the BBC. Now, how did that kind of transpire? What was the...
It was the fact that I'd been here for quite a few years at that point, and because I'd come straight from college to work, I had, even though I did some part-time stuff at the BBC while I was here, I had no real life experience, and I started to feel again like a bit of a fraud, a lot of students were saying, oh, should I go to university? What's that like? And I couldn't give them a genuine answer because I had no idea. And so I actually ended up doing my sort of university quite late in, not late in life, but sort of in my mid to late 20s.
Right.
because I felt like I should get some life experience. And I'll tell anyone who's listening here that Jersey is not real life. You know, there's such a bigger world out there, yeah. and I felt like I needed to experience it.
Yeah.
So that was the real thing. And luckily, I'd worked here long enough that in the states of Jersey, they do a career break where you can take a year off. Mm-hmm. They have to keep your role, but you take a year off and do not whatever you want, but something that would eventually help your role when you come back.
Yeah.
So I thought that's the perfect opportunity because I must admit, I was a bit scared to kind of say, you know, bye bye Highlands, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Although everyone assumed I wasn't coming back, but I ended up coming back because I like working here, you know. Yeah. So it was nice to have that option.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And so you utilised the skills that you had from here, but also working within the BBC and some contacts. So how did that go about? Did you send out a few emails, find out what opportunities there were? Like, what was the process in terms of?
Luckily, the actual career break was I did a course in the UK at Ealing Studios, which was like a visual effects course, 3D animation, that kind of thing. Cool. But luckily, because you know, the BBC is one of those few companies that still, you know, has quite a big network and different hubs and that kind of thing. Yeah. Just because I happen to have worked locally, and loads of people, even local BBC, come from the UK, so everyone talks to each other. So luckily, my boss at BBC said, "Oh, I'll make a phone call, and you can do some work, in the big BBC." So ended up visiting and working at, you know, TV Centre, the big famous donut building. Which they've just reopened again now. It's where they film Good Morning Britain and all those kind of shows. But it, because as a child, your favourite shows like, you know, Only Fools and Horses, Doctor Who, all those sort of famous BBC shows were shot there.
Yeah.
It was amazing to go there and actually visit it and actually do a bit of work there.
So how was that in terms of, so you got your boss and he made the calls and then you got the opportunity. So you had to basically move your entire life to to London, which is kind of a big change from coming from 9 by 5. And some of our students listening to this will be putting it into a similar context for going to university and things like that. So how was that in terms of, was it a bit of a culture shock for you?
I'd been to London before, but when I was deciding, you know, or if I'm going to go away, what am I going to do? Yeah. I've seen a lot of students who say, well, I'm going to go to Bournemouth, I'm going to go to a seaside town. Yeah. And yes, that is, you know, that is going away, that is trying something different, but it's just a variation on the same thing. I thought, if I'm going to go away, you know, I know some people go to Australia and study there, but that's probably a bit much for me.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, what's the biggest change I could make? And it's, let's go to the big city, you know. Yeah. And because I was, you know, quite a nerdy type and quite shy, there was something quite appealing about the fact that London is so anonymous.
Yeah.
So you could go around, take your clothes off and run in the middle of the street and no one would even bat an eyelid. And and there was something, you know, really just appealing about that. Yeah. But it's also the fact it was a melting pot that I thought, you know, I've only really met Jersey people.
Yeah.
You know, I know that London's going to have so many people from so many different countries.
Yeah.
And I met just so many interesting people. I mean, I count my best friend, someone who's my best friend, who lives in Istanbul, you know, and actually came from Istanbul. So just meeting people of different, you know, religions, creeds, you know, all that kind of thing, is just an amazing experience.
Well, and I suppose the BBC is a bit of a melting pot as well, because it's looking at global events, global news. They've got productions in pretty much every country you can think of. And so a lot of those expertise will be brought to that hub. Is that something you found, you know, in terms of like the level of skills and types of vocation that you encountered probably within that building? Was it like kind of mind-blowing, or was it like, oh, okay, no, this is just the way this company works sort of thing?
I must admit I was surprised, because the skills that I'd learned, I'd kind of learned myself and taught myself, because like I say, I started off in IT, so the media skills I learned and I kind of taught myself. And so I must admit I was surprised when I went to this big place that they did do things the kind of same way, you know, that even the software that they use, the way, you know, the way they creatively build projects and that kind of thing. I was scared that I'd go in there and they would go, that's not how we do things.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really nice that I went in there and said, oh yeah, I recognise this software. I recognise this way of doing things. Yeah. It wasn't as big a culture shock as I thought it would be.
Okay. And that's down to, like, I suppose the reason you got that opportunity was because you were driven to find things out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then a byproduct of that hard work is then when you got the nod that you were, you know, fairly efficient with knowing what's going on. That's all through doing things in your own time and pushing yourself.
And yeah, and I think that's necessary because, I mean, anybody who's looking for a job, jobs don't just fall on your lap unless you meet, you know, it's a cliche, you know, it's who you know. Mm. And anyone who's looking for a job, especially in the creative industries, for example, you're not going to go on gov.je and find the best job, apply for it and get it. That's just, in some industries, yes, you can do that.
Yeah.
In the creative industries, especially, you cannot do that. Yeah. BBC do advertise jobs, you know, that anyone can apply for, but it's very rare that you just apply for a job and get it in that kind of industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, even getting the local job initially, you know, local BBC, I just emailed the manager of local BBC, you know, and just said, oh, I do editing and things, I'd like a job.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think I was like 20, 21 when I did that. I wouldn't do that now. I just think that's so cheeky to kind of email the boss and go, well, give me a job then.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, I suppose that element of taking a risk is all tied up in I suppose what we're talking about. You know, taking the risk to, you know, be cheeky and be confident in your skills, to then go and like interview people and put together a package that's going to be shown on telly is a risk in itself, and it was something you were doing all the time.
Well, part of the reason why I did it was because I had, other than wanting to get some experience in the industry, I was quite a nerdy type who had just done an IT course, but again, no real world experience. Mm-hmm. And I was quite a shy person, but so I wanted to just gain some confidence. And I thought, and luckily the guy I approached at BBC, after I met him, I thought I was just going to do some editing for them in like the editing bay, sit in a darkened room and just do some work. But the first thing he said was, no, you're going to a rugby game at the weekend and you're going to interview some rugby players.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've never, I am such a shy person and you're sending me to these burly rugby players and I've got to try and coax them into giving answers, and it's not as if the interview's been set up. I've got to run up to them and collar them and say, I want to interview you.
Yeah.
And I just have that memory now of going, I didn't sleep for 3 days because I was so nervous about this was something entirely new to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I have to name check the guy. He's Ian Kelly, who ran the BBC over here at that time. I think he recognised in me that there's some skill set there.
Right.
But he needs to be, you know, he needs to be pushed a little bit just to gain that confidence. And to be honest, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now if he hadn't done that, because I'd probably still be that little nerdy kid who's very, you know, shy and doesn't really talk to people, you know.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose that's really cool in terms of you taking the risk, but then someone else actually seeing that within you is a real big thing. But you won't get that necessarily until you put yourself out there to get those opportunities, and probably, you know, put yourself in the position to be rejected from those opportunities as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I must admit, I've been very lucky. I don't think I've been properly rejected from anything I've approached, you know, whether it's jobs here or jobs in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been jobs that I applied for where I just get an email saying, oh, I'm sort of very sorry, we're looking for somebody else. But I don't think I've ever been properly rejected, so I'm not entirely sure what that feels like. Well,
I have. And
what's that like?
Well, it's depending on how much you want the role. There's some job roles that you really, really want, and you really push yourself and you put in the prep and you put in the time and studied and all that, but you just don't get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that is because someone was better suited for it. And you have to take those, things, and it's going to sound so cliche, but they are learning opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can throw your toys out the pram and go, well, it's because of this and because of that and because of this. But actually, it's because you were maybe lacking on something, and you have to go away and work on that. And that is, I mean, I pushing it onto myself. When I finished my master's degree, I almost finished like, you know, the world owed me something. Mm-hmm. Now, I had no real world experience. I'd been a student. I'd done bits of jobs here and there. But trying to find a job within the tech industry was very, very difficult because people looked at my CV and they interviewed me and they went, oh, you got lots of, you know, current skills, academic skills, and you're highly qualified, but you've got no experience.
Oh, it's that catch 22 of, you know, yeah. We need experience, but I'm trying to get some experience.
Well, that's it. And so it's very similar, you know, thing where I, you know, started doing my own things, kind of freelance, being a bit more cheeky, sending a few extra things out here and there. I can do this job for you for cheaper than them, and building up like a portfolio through that extent. But enough about me.
What I'm saying is that there's probably a lot of that you need that one lucky break.
Yeah.
I think there's no guaranteed route to success for that kind of thing.
And, you know, you have to, the lucky break won't just fall on your lap. You know, it will sometimes appear out of nowhere, but you've got to grasp the opportunity, which is a big thing. But you've got to put in the legwork first to make it work. So in this time working for the BBC full time in London, what were some of the like major experiences for you from that? What were some of the things that you kind of carry with you now?
It was just meeting and working with different people, mm-hmm. And have different ways of, you know, working styles and that kind of thing, and different, you know, personalities. Yeah. Because especially in the creative world, mm-hmm. there are people, you know, who have very strong personalities.
Yeah.
And the big thing that I mean, other than the technical skills and the blah, blah, blah that I learnt and the things that I did people-wise, it was learning to deal with different types of people. And mm-hmm. that's become massively useful here because, you know, if a teacher here, and I'm not naming any names, of course, you know, stress and throws a temper tantrum, and says, oh, this piece of technology isn't working, chucks it at the wall. Mm. You could very easily just get really stressed and go, oh, God, this is not worth it. But being lucky to work with people of different personality types and different temperaments and things, mm-hmm. now it's just, you know, water off a duck's back. And but also, I like to feel like that I can have good conversations with different types of people, even if I'm not necessarily into the type of things that they are or wouldn't normally be a friend to them, you know, outside of the job. The thing that working elsewhere taught me was just being able to deal with loads of different types of people. And, you know.
Well, that's a big... It's funny that you mentioned that. We obviously talk to lots of employers about what they want students to come out with. Mm. And one of the major things that we're finding, even though, you know, I teach in tech, is they want the communication skills. They want the soft skills. They want people to be able to become part of a team and deal with different personalities. you know, because... If you're, let's say, working in tech in finance, then, you know, the way that a director of a company might react when their stuff isn't working, because they're, you know, they're on big money, time is money, is very different to how, you know, someone else might react who might have a bit more of a view on the technology and understands the process.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's one of the things. So, like you say, going somewhere else, learning from different people, dealing with different people with different temperaments, communication styles, all that sort of stuff is a key to most jobs now.
I mean, just imagine if, you know, you weren't amazing at dealing with people and then that CEO shouts at you, even though it's not your fault, you know, technology breaks, you know, that kind of happens. Yeah. But you could take that very personally and it could really affect your mental health if you've never dealt with that kind of person before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was really helpful just to work with so many different people and learn what they're like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not new to you. When it does happen, you know, you just go, oh, well, whatever.
So... within the role itself, I remember you saying you got to actually travel a bit further afield, because we've chatted about this briefly, you know, but kind of kept it for this topic. But I know you went to America.
I mean, that was actually not part of the BBC job.
Mm-hmm.
It was because after I did the career break here, I had a bit of time before I came back.
Yeah.
And I'd at BBC, I'd been lucky. I'd managed to work on some documentaries that ended up on BBC One. You know, so that was fantastic. But I just thought, well, before I go back, let's see if I can go a little bit further. Yeah. How much further could I go? And luckily, I just happened to be on Kickstarter one day.
Okay.
and the company in the US had acquired this footage. I'm a I know this is going to turn some people off, but I'm a massive Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And this company had acquired the rights to an interview by Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek.
Wow.
And he was interviewed about Star Trek quite a lot, but not about his personal life. Mm. So they had this interview, and they were going to do this whole documentary around it. And they were looking for funding, so I funded it a bit. You know, gave him a bit of money, but I also said, I'd love to work on that.
Yeah.
So again, dropped them an email and just said, oh, I'd love to come and work on that.
Yeah.
And they said, oh yeah, we're filming in Los Angeles. And I went, oh, crap.
Yeah, yeah.
That's further than I was expecting.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I other than going to New York for like a week on holiday, I'd never been to America before.
Yeah.
So again, it was meeting different types of people. And I met... these hot, you know, they're almost like cliched Hollywood producers where like everything's amazing and you're amazing. And even though I'd only worked, you know, a bit at national BBC, but mostly at London BBC level, being a British person, I was honest and, you know, quite realistic about what my skills were. But of course, being these American Hollywood guys, they were like, ah, Ben owns the BBC. Everyone they were talking to, Ben owns the BBC, you know. And so again, it's meeting different types of people. I just found them hilarious.
Yeah, that's cool. And so doing that, you took part in some of the interviews. Did you find that, you know, we were talking about the communication skills earlier, was there anything that was from that learning in the workplace on those kind of softer skills that came in useful when you were in that role?
Yeah, actually, I've mentioned to you before, but I'll tell it again. We interviewed a couple of the actors from Star Trek, a couple of the directors and stuff. There was one guy in particular. It was a guy called David Carson, I think his name was. He directed one of the Star Trek movies, and we were interviewing him for this documentary. And he was an English guy. But he'd obviously lived in America for a long time and was a bit fed up of that. And I'm not saying all Americans are like this at all, because they are not. Mm-hmm. But that these kind of Hollywood types that I was working with, that whole kind of hyperbole stuff, you know, like, oh, you're amazing and all that.
Yeah.
And so we were interviewing him, and he was getting a bit fed up.
Yeah.
And so even though as my job over there was really just filming and helping them edit and stuff, I wasn't really meant to talk to the people we were interviewing, really. But I piped up a bit because he was starting to get a bit arsey.
Yeah.
I piped up because I'd noticed a few days ago, because I did some research on him just to see what he was like, just in case, you know, anything needed to come up.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a quiet moment. It was just to add a bit more to it. And I found that on his IMDb page, that the first thing he ever directed was an episode of Bergerac,
right,
in the early 1980s.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, what if I just happened to mention, oh, I'm from Jersey. You haven't been there by any chance, have you?
Yeah.
So I just being able to have the confidence to kind of pipe up and say, oh, you know, I'm from Jersey. You know, I noticed the accent. You haven't visited Jersey by any chance.
Yeah.
And he really lit up. He said, oh, yeah, I've been to Jersey. I directed. Do you remember Bergerac? Like, yeah, of course, yeah. It's our national TV show.
Yeah.
You know, it's all Jersey ever talks about, even now.
Yeah.
And so just have... And a few years ago, I would not have been able to do that. I would have just, you know, stood in a corner and just kept quiet and done my job.
Yeah, just swam in the awkwardness of the moment, yeah.
And so me and him ended up having quite a long conversation, and we got more out of him because of that.
Because of that, that's awesome. And that's it, you see, it's when you string all those experiences and those different things together,
there is a path, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's only sometimes when we sit back and we reflect on what it is. Like I was saying before, you know, when you don't achieve something, you often reflect on why you didn't achieve it. And some of the things that we are not necessarily good at as a society, maybe, is reflecting on why we did something well. And so if something does happen, we can always piece back, oh, well, these are the skills I learned here. This is what I learned here. This is from this experience.
Yeah.
And how that can all kind of tie together. You mentioned that you worked on some documentaries at the BBC. What documentaries? Do you remember the names and
there was a couple of them, but the one I remember the most, there was one called Refugees of the Lost Rainforest.
Okay.
So Durrell, this is why I got it, because there was local links.
Mm-hmm.
Durrell had done some work in Sumatra.
Okay.
because the palm oil industry, which is a massive, massive industry, and it means cutting down rainforests in Sumatra and killing orangutans and that kind of thing. And so it was a documentary on that. One of the journalists at BBC really wanted to make this documentary, and she just happened to have local links. So I edited that with her, and it was an amazing experience. I'd never even heard of Sumatra before, now just doing that documentary, I now look on the back of packets of Mars bars or whatever, and if it's got the word palm oil in it, I try and put it aside, just because now I've made that documentary, I've learned things, you know. I mean, I worked on a couple of little ones, but that honestly is the only one that really sticks out in my mind.
That was the major one, the one that you'll take with you. Wow, that's awesome. And then, like you say, you know, we're now, what is it, you know, we're in November 21, we're talking about these things on you know, in a more open way about, you know, climate and deforestation and things like that. And so that's quite a cool one to have been a part of. Like, so how many years ago was it you?
Oh, blimey, it's probably about, that particular one was probably about 6 years ago now.
Right, okay. So, you know, still fairly recent.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, the rate of change. So we could probably still find that somewhere.
Oh, it'll be on iPlayer for sure. I mean, I kept a copy.
Oh, cool.
I do actually remember that when it went out, you know, when you do things for TV, you always want to see your name in the credits.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So when I put it on, I remember this is exactly the kind of thing that would happen to me when the credits came up. You know, sometimes you watch on TV, the credits come up and they squeeze it to like a 2-inch stamp. You can't see the credits anymore and say, ooh, this is what's coming up next. Yeah. My name came up exactly as that happened.
As that happened.
So, and I thought, that's just typical.
Well, what I'll do is I'll try and find it on the iPlayer. I'll put a link in so people can watch it from here. So that was great. I mean, I suppose the conversation's been around, it's been largely around about risk and learning and reflection.
I mean, it all sounds very grand when you put it together like that. But at the time, it did seem kind of a big thing. Yeah. But even taking that risk to work, even indeed, forget about leaving Jersey for a minute, even just going out of your comfort zone and working in a different area, a different company that you've never worked in before. We have students here who sometimes they're anxious about even coming into Highlands. And, you know, I understand anxiety. A lot of the issues we've found lately is that the students, they have this anxiety, but they do want to do something about it, but they just don't. Even though there are a lot of ways that they can, you know, work to sort of deal with the anxiety, or, you know, there's so many people they could see. But I try and say to them, look, just, you know, I know you are anxious, and I know this day is going to be horrible, you know, you coming into college and doing this thing. But do it, because otherwise, if you don't, when you're 30, 35 years old, that anxiety is still going to be there. I mean, it may still be there, but at least you'll be able to deal with it. If you do need to push yourself, and baby steps, you know. You don't have to do grand gestures every, you know, week, but anxiety is a painful thing. But please, you know, push yourself just that little bit every day.
I normally end these with you know, if you could go back and give yourself one bit of advice. But I think you've just encapsulated that question perfectly there in terms of be brave enough to push yourself. And once you've pushed yourself that little bit, then taking the next step gets easier and easier. And you have to do that if you want to pursue something you're interested in. And
because now I'm doing things that I really enjoy. Because, I mean, I must admit, I've said that, you know, I did all these things, but every single one of those things that I did, I think I was scared the whole time. And it was only afterwards that I was relaxed and said, oh, I'm glad I did that. But at the time, scared out of my mind. I would, you know, just visiting different countries, you know, even speaking to different people I'd not spoken to before, terrified. But as you say, it gets a bit easier each time, and now that little knot in your stomach, it's just that little bit smaller.
I mean, it's a long way from interviewing an amateur rugby player after a game on a Saturday.
I'm still scared of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I would be as well.
I don't know how to talk to these people. How about the local sports team?
But that's amazing, and it's thank you for kind of joining us for the conversation, because it's really interesting to hear You know, to hear that about, you know, what effectively is you know, a short-term career change to upskill yourself, but you know, it's a more creative way to take a gap year.
You
know, and
did
you
it
actually,
late.
Well, that's it. You did it late, but you actually got something from it, and the skills and things there that you've learned that have helped you and are still continuing to help you, and that you're still building on, which is really cool to hear. So thanks very much, Ben.
Thanks for chatting.
And I'll do my best to find that documentary and put a link.
No. I've deleted it. I've removed any part of its existence.
Wicked. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Cheers.